Issues Etc. is listener-supported. We rely on you for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Now, if you appreciate Issues Etc., please consider making a tax-deductible gift today. You can make a secure online contribution at issuesetc.org. You can also donate by check. Make your check payable to Issues Etc. and send it to Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Thanks for your support.
It's not as though there's a shortage of information. You'll see it in social media, Christian persecution, beheading of Christians in the Middle East. So why does the media have such a hard time covering these very obvious stories? It's not always media bias. I'm Todd Wilkin. Welcome back to Issues Etc. Joining us to talk about media coverage of Christian persecution and Russia's involvement in Syria, Terry Mattingly. He's Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate, and founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Glad to be here.
So can you explain the relative lack of media coverage of Christian persecution in the Middle East, and is this news?
Well, let me give you a valid reason for the lack of coverage, and then we can speculate on what may be considered a darker reason, okay? The valid reason is, first of all, it's just really hard to cover things inside Islamic State territory. I mean, several journalists have already had their heads cut off trying. I mean, so there is a very high degree of difficulty to get in there, which means the coverage you see in the press tends to give you a really good indication of what the press thinks is most important. Does that make sense? I mean, if you're going to be risking your life and having to do all kinds of crazy things to get information on this kind of subject, that tells you a lot about what editors are after, correct? Then second, I think it's safe to say that the destruction of antiquities and a host of other, for lack of a better term, secular or more academic destructive patterns in Islamic states, that's the kind of thing that you're going to have major think tanks at Oxford and Cambridge and Harvard and the United Nations. You're going to have big, respected, authoritative groups of people trying to develop what information they can. Women's rights, for example, would have many, many institutions and academics and researchers that take that subject really seriously, and they're going to do everything they can to find out what's going on in there. And these are sources that, quite frankly, the press tends to respect with good reason. They have, you know, decades of experience in the region. They've got all kinds of Arabic speakers, you know, on their staffs, et cetera, et cetera. So that's a valid reason for why they're covering some of these news stories more than others. Now, the other problem is, Matt, perhaps a little bit darker. And that's something you and I have talked about before, which is there are many journalists who just have trouble thinking of Christians as victims, even though in this part of the world, the ancient Christian churches of the Middle East have been oppressed, if not outright persecuted, off and on for like 1,500 years, you know, in their battles, spiritual and otherwise, with Islam. A lot of that history just goes over the heads of most American readers and, quite frankly, most newspaper editors. I saw a story the other day that had one of those errors that made you just kind of laugh to keep from crying in it. And it said that until the Islamic State, Christians and Muslims had lived peacefully together in this region for 2,000 years. Now, do the math. I mean, forget whether or not that's true. I mean, I know people who were driven out of Syria and into Lebanon and everywhere else, you know, in previous waves of persecution decades ago, and this is with their families being slaughtered, et cetera. I mean, so what's going on with the Islamic State is horrible. It's historic, but it is certainly not new. yet at the same time, when was Muhammad born? like 570 AD. So how could there be tensions between Muslims and Christians in the region? I mean, how could they be living peacefully together in the region for 2,000 years?
Right. When for the first 500 years, Islam didn't exist.
The mathematics there doesn't quite add up. And so, like I said, so there's a lot of there's a lot just of plain ignorance there. It's hard to cover a story if you don't know it exists, and it's hard to cover a story if you don't know enough about it to know who to call. Which brings us to the other problem. A lot of the reports that are coming out about the persecution of the church are coming through institutions that, frankly, the press doesn't respect as much as perhaps they could or maybe even should, and that's ancient churches they've never heard of, or evangelical Protestant mission organizations that, quite frankly, the materials they produce have an awful lot of a kind of public relations advocacy style to them. And you wonder if these people really have their facts straight. You know what I'm getting at? I mean, you probably have read your share of missionary communications, and let's just say they're not written in a style to appeal to the editors of the New York Times. They're written in a style to appeal to donors, correct? So there's a tendency to maybe somewhat inflate the story. And also, quite frankly, they're being careful. They don't want their sources that remain inside the Islamic State. They don't want to betray who those sources are. Yet that makes it almost impossible for reporters to kind of walk in their footsteps and try to re-report some of the facts to try to find out what happened. You see what I'm getting at? The reporters don't trust the sources enough to go in and try to do their own follow-up work. So that's kind of a dark reason, but I also think you can go darker still, which is I think there are newspaper editors who just don't really care whether Christians would be dedicated readers of stories about suffering believers of various religious minorities, but primarily Christians, in the Middle East. And there have been numerous books written about this. The one that really broke the topic open was by my Global Media Project colleague, Paul Marshall, years ago wrote a book, famous book, called Their Blood Cries Out. I believe that was co-written with Nina Shea, in which he noted some theological reasons. There are Protestants who hope the Middle East blows up and it all goes away because that would be a sign to the end times and the rapture, right? And there are also Protestants that look at these ancient churches, which are Orthodox and Assyrian Catholic and whatever, and they look at them and they don't see believers. They just see what looks like a bunch of culty people wearing gold robes. And maybe we don't care if their monasteries get trashed. That's pretty dark. But it's a reality. I mean, that the American religious scene, when it comes to the churches of the Middle East, is pretty heavily Protestant. Which means until the Pope starts really crying about this loud, we may not get much coverage at all. Did any of that make sense?
Yeah, I'd like you to explain some aspects of it. First of all, as to sources and verification, because way back at your least dark explanation, there kind of lurks this idea that, look, the honest journalist says, I don't have solid information. I'm getting all these reports coming from, say, mission groups or advocacy groups, and I don't know how I could possibly verify it without getting my head chopped off, or seriously putting my life or someone else's life at risk, and that seems too far a road to hoe to take this story. Explain the difference here between solid sources, as a journalist would look at it, and the attendant ability to be able to verify what a source
says. Well, first of all, it just starts with who you trust. So a major study comes out from Oxford University and the United Nations Commission on Women. That is automatically going to be trusted by the press. And they're going to assume that these United Nations people probably do have good sources. I mean, your major human rights organizations like Amnesty International, they have been working on this kind of stuff for decades. And I think there is just an assumption among the press This is a quality, trustworthy source. We believe they have real people still in there. Okay? Now, you contrast that with what your local newspaper editor or even an elite editor at the New York Times thinks when he hears of something from a Christian missionary agency that says, we have sources inside the Islamic State who called us, and they said the other day that a pastor in Aleppo told them, we're now two steps removed, that he witnessed 12 Christians slaughtered, including converts from Islam, one of whom had to watch his 11-year-old son tortured to death, et cetera. Now, is the local editor going to say, gosh, I believe that? Or how could they even begin to try to verify that information? It's coming through underground Christians on the scene reporting to their mission agency. Do you think that's going to be trusted by the editors as much as they would trust the UN, Amnesty International, and Oxford?
Well, I mean, obviously they're going to go for the latter. The problem is if I'm an editor to report these things in a timely way, UNHCR, Amnesty International, the others, they will report on these things weeks, months after they have occurred, after they've had a chance to verify them. And so that's going to be my story. They report that these things did occur some time back. And I'll wait for them. That if I'm the editor, I mean, honestly, I'm going to wait for them to verify it for me.
There has been amazing material in the Washington Post based on stuff that the Islamic State itself has put up in social media. And then when they see those documents verify what they heard earlier, then they run with it. But trust me, there are people attempting to verify what's happening to the church in this part of the world. And you just have to know who to call. I remember a time in my own career years ago where there were revolts occurring in a part of Africa. I don't remember the exact details, but this would have been in the late 1980s. And the foreign desk at the Rocky Mountain News came over and said, we're just not having any luck at all. We can't get any sources to talk to us. The wire service reports, and we want to know in particular whether there are any people from the Western United States who are in there right now. We want to know if there are any local people. And they said, do you think you could help? With two phone calls, I called the Foreign Missions Agency of the Southern Baptist Convention. And within minutes, as long as they kept the names anonymous, I had phone numbers for them in country, in Africa, of Southern Baptist missionaries who were watching the tanks roll by their windows. Now, you could, if you developed a relationship of trust, I think a reporter could get to within one phone call of a couple of these sources in country.
Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about media coverage of Christian persecution. When we come back, Russia's involvement in Syria. Stay tuned. If you're a talk radio junkie like me, you might assume that the programming is free. Commercial advertisers pay for the production costs and staff salaries. Well, that's true for most radio talk shows, but not for Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is listener-supported. We rely on you to pay for the production, salary, and airtime costs for this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin, asking you to consider making a tax-deductible gift to Issues Etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or you can donate by check. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio. The address? LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Remember, unlike other talk radio shows, Issues Etc. needs your financial support. We depend on you for the continuation and expansion of Issues Etc. Thanks for your consideration.
Solid. Serious. Substantive. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Did you know that Luther Academy has been providing continuing education for confessional Lutheran pastors and lay people worldwide for more than 20 years? Luther Academy promotes confessional Lutheran theology through conferences, scholarly exchanges, and publications like Logia, the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatic Series, and Luther Digest. Find out more about Luther Academy and sign up for their free email newsletter at lutheracademy.com. lutheracademy.com.
This is the day which the Lord has made.
Listen to chapel services live, weekday mornings from Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Better is one day in your courts.
Morning Chapel from Kramer Chapel, live weekday mornings at 9 Central, 10 Eastern, 8 Mountain, and 7 Pacific at issuesetc.org.
Bless and preserve us.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. We're talking about media coverage of Christian persecution. Turning to the subject of Russia's involvement in Syria, Terry Mattingly is our guest. Terry, that is a related story, although at this point, Russia's actions there in Syria are not targeting ISIS targets. How is this story being portrayed in the press, and what needs further portrayal?
Yeah. Well, I wrote a piece this morning trying to predict where this story would go. Buried way down in a New York Times story the other day was a mention of the fact that a group of Muslim clerics had declared holy war in Syria and had said, and primarily backing the insurgents. Now, these are people who oppose the Islamic State, yet they're loyal to Saudi Arabia or they're loyal to other insurgent groups, which, by the way, might include Al-Qaeda. I mean, so that's that group of insurgents is who America is counting on to bring down the government of President Assad. That has been our basic policy for some time. Now, when you look at this from a Christian perspective, the problem is that some of those insurgent groups are also known for kidnapping and killing Christians. They just apparently are killing them at a slower rate than the Islamic State, which in the weird world of our policies right now in the Middle East makes them the good guys. In my own Eastern Orthodox churches, I mean, I've been a part of two of them since I recently moved from Baltimore to Oak Ridge, we've been praying for the safe release of two bishops who were kidnapped like 3 years ago by an insurgent group in Syria, which is actively supported by the U.S. government. So that group opposes Assad. It also supposedly opposes the Islamic State. So that's pretty complex stuff. What I think is interesting about this is the Muslim clerics declaring holy war were in some way responding to a statement by the Russian Orthodox Patriarch of Moscow, Patriarch Kirill. And he made a statement in favor of Putin's policy to intervene in Syria. Now, I think most people would stop and know that the dominant religion of Russia is Russian Orthodoxy. To one degree or another, sincere, to some degree cynical, to what degree is it revitalized, you know, after the fall of the Soviet Union? There are a lot of complexities there, but I think most people know they think Russia, they think Russian Orthodoxy. But when they think Damascus, they don't realize that on the street called Straight, mentioned in the book of Acts, the Antiochian Orthodox Church is still there. And that one of the centers of the world Orthodox faith is Damascus. So when you hear about ISIS being in a position to make a run at taking Damascus, you're talking about something even more striking than the slaughter of the ancient Christian churches on the plain of Nineveh, where there were ancient monasteries with libraries that go back to the ancient church that no longer exist. Priceless, irreplaceable documents, monks, nuns, iconography, architecture, all of that is gone in Nineveh, in the Nineveh plain. Damascus is all of that times 10 from the point of view of some Christians in this world, particularly Orthodox Christians. So in other words, whereas our newspaper stories are talking about Putin's intervention in Syria, strictly in secular terms, this is a power play. He's trying to embarrass Barack Obama. He just wants the oil. He's just trying to mess with our affairs, etc. All of that may be true to some degree. But what if Russian support for this also pivots in some way on the fact that they don't want to see millions, thousands and thousands, maybe even millions of more Christians killed. That's something America doesn't seem to be factoring in as a factor in its policies. The ugliness here is that means supporting Assad. And Assad is a monster of a different vein. But as an Orthodox bishop here in America preached in a sermon a couple of years ago, all of the armies in that part of the world are led by monsters. At some point, the church has been forced to deal with the monster that doesn't currently want to kill it, as opposed to the monsters that are pledged and have demonstrated they will kill them. That's pretty complex stuff. But how much, I mean, for several years now, I've seen some websites, and you and I have talked about it, have just been talking about the fact that no one seems to be paying much attention to what's happening to the church in this part of the Middle East. Well, all of that is now getting ratcheted up and up and up as the danger increases with the Islamic State. And now Putin has acted. I'm hearing from Orthodox Christians who said, it's very awkward, our church doesn't know what to do. But last night we had people asking if our church could pray for the Army and the Air Force of Russia, because that might be the only way that our brothers and sisters survive in Damascus, because it seems like America wants to have nothing to do with them.
So
that's pretty awkward stuff, isn't it?
Yes. I guess I have to ask, if is a pressing question here for the media coverage of this, because this is a huge story, an enormous story. Is the pressing question here, does Putin have some religious sensibilities working into his foreign policy here?
Well, yeah. I mean, to what degree do you trust Putin? And to some degree, I don't. But at some point, even if he is doing this for cynical reasons, if one of those reasons is it would look really good for me and it would draw me some support for my policies here in Russia if I prevent the massacre of Christians, even if he has chosen that reason somewhat cynically, he could still potentially prevent the slaughter of millions of Christians. Does that make sense? At some point, to the folks who are facing their destruction, his sincerity doesn't matter all that much. All they see is America backing Islamic insurgents who have kidnapped some of their bishops with our tax dollars and our arms and our planes and whatever else, and they see Putin trying to protect Damascus. And you mentioned that right now he's attacking primarily insurgents, because at the moment that's kind of who's closer. But he is saying his goal is to prevent the fall of the Assad regime. And when he says that, he means Damascus and the crucial cities, you know, around it. And from Christians, from the Christian point of view, is now that they've killed us in Nineveh, that's basically where we're left.
Then with about 30 seconds here, Terry, how would you advise the American press to pursue this story further?
I would call up some of the mission agencies that are releasing these reports. The reports are all over the wire, all over these independent religious-based wire services. Call some of them up, but I would also have reporters get in touch with mainstream Orthodox sources, both at the World Council of Churches, but also with their own bodies, and I would get in touch with the church in Damascus. And I would try to make sure that people got official statements from the major Eastern Rite Catholic and Orthodox bodies that are still there. Those people ought to have some authority, in some cases about 2,000 years worth.
Terry Mattingly, a senior fellow for media and religion at the King's College in New York City. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate, and he is founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, thank you for being our guest.
Glad to be here.